biggest idiots deserve the big bad shovel of wisdom. Sponsored by Jerry's Toyota.
And their exclusive benefits, including free service maintenance for 4 years or 50,000 miles. Visit Jerry's Toyota just north of the Beltway on Bel Air Road and online at jerrystoyota.com.
105.7 The Fan.
We're giving out shovels at 8:03 in the a.m. If you have a shovel, give us a call. Give us a text, 410-583-1057. Hit us up on Twitter, at BBMS, 1057 The Fan. Ed Norris, who gets your shovel?
Vladimir Putin. I mean, if anybody's following this, it's scary and depressing. This war in Ukraine is going on for a long time, and probably far longer than Putin assumed, because they're putting up a great resistance. But what's really scary about this is, you know, I don't know if you saw that he has like 10,000 North Korean troops now, because he can't beat the Ukrainians. So he's got North Korea helping him out. And now, because of this, you know, Biden has actually given a green light for Ukraine to use our missiles to actually shoot into the Russia proper. So since that happened, he's taking this as an act of aggression. It's okay that he's invaded this country and murdered civilians, but now that he's getting missiles, he's threatening the nuclear option. He's changed the threshold for that. And it just reminds me, I don't know if he's going to do it or not do it, but he seems to rattle his saber very often. It reminds me of that song by Sting, where, yeah, this one. To respond to all the threats and the rhetorical speeches of the soul. And this talks about, the name of the song is Russians. And the repeat line is, do the Russians love their children too? Because it'd be the end of the world, as you know it. It'd be the end of the world, period. I mean, it's just the weapons now, this is not Nagasaki and Hiroshima. This is like exponentially more powerful stuff. The world would be over. So he's threatened this. But what he does seem to do on a routine basis, and they now, they've actually named this syndrome, Russian Sudden Death Syndrome. It's a propensity among critics of the Kremlin who meet untimely deaths. You've heard about this forever and ever. The latest one is one of the greatest Russian ballet dancers of his generation, Vladimir Shkralov. I'm going to do that. Anyway, he's a 39-year-old ballet dancer. Amazing. He walks out of his apartment to go on his balcony for a smoke. He falls 5 stories to his death. We talk about Lamar Jackson, you know, Russell Westbrook. These guys were really athletically, super athletically gifted. Have you ever seen these ballet dancers? These guys are incredibly fit. They're incredibly strong. They're the most coordinated people I've ever seen. What are the chances this guy fell out a window? Really? Come on. Come on. You told me the least likely candidate on the planet to probably fall off a balcony is this guy. And then you go another, oh, Ivan Safronov, Russian journalist. He fell down out a fifth-floor staircase window. How do you fall a staircase window? You're looking at the staircase? Is it floor-to-ceiling window? Yeah. He was another one who was critical of the Kremlin. You told me this. I mean, Nikolai Gorokov tumbled 50 feet from the balcony of his home in Moscow after a wench used to deliver a bathtub in the apartment suddenly snapped. The list goes on and on and on. This ballet dancer is just the latest. It's like, this guy's got to go, man. What a horrible person. And like of course, the dancer himself, Vladimir, was critical of the war in Ukraine a couple years ago. And every one of these guys have been critical of Putin, the Kremlin, or this war in Ukraine, have fallen out windows. And proper name for my homicide, defenestration, is when you fall or get thrown out a window. These guys all face defenestration. It's like uncanny. And my question is, are you buying this? This is an accident?
No, not buying it. It was an accident, but what can be done about it? What are you going to do?
Nothing.
Nothing.
We can't do anything about it.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
I don't, yeah.
You know, for people that don't think this guy is just one of the, you know, the most horrible world leaders in this, you know, this century, you're out of your mind.
My shovel goes to Jets owner Woody Johnson. Woody Johnson's name has come up in the news, firing of his coach, without consulting the GM, and then you fire the GM will help put the team together, but you blocked certain moves that he wanted to make that probably could have made the team better. He also wanted to orchestrate Aaron Rodgers being benched back in September. He's just all over the place. And we said it before, we talked about him in a different setting. The only thing different between he and Jerry Jones is, although it was a gazillion years ago, Jerry Jones has 3 Super Bowl championships. Woody Johnson has none. If you were a free agent, you can go anywhere you want. Why would you want to go to the Jets and play with that type of dysfunctional organization? I wouldn't either.
Why would you want? Seriously, there's some teams. If I had a choice as a player, why would you want to go to the Jets, the Browns, the Panthers? The Panthers is another dysfunctional organization.
If you're a good coach, why would you want to go? New coach who's looking for that first opportunity, or a guy like Mike McCarthy once he gets fired by Dallas, retread. The only people they could get is a new coach like Robert Saleh who needed an opportunity, or a Mike McCarthy type. I'm not saying him.
No, I got it.
That type. People are just desperate for opportunities. Yeah. People who have, you know, if I'm Bill Belichick, and I don't know how many opportunities he has, but
he was a Jets coach at one point.
And he bailed out before he even coached
the press conference.
Why would you want that gig?
The only reason I'd want it because it's only one of 32.
That's a new coach.
Yeah, it's a new coach.
Or a coach that's not getting any love from anywhere else.
Yeah. And there's 1,700, over 1,700 players, but there's only 32 head coaches.
Yeah.
Not much opportunity.
I wouldn't want that gig at all. 410-583-1057. Let's go to the phone lines and get Antonio. What's up, Antonio?
Good morning.
Morning. How are you?
Good. Happy Friday, man.
Happy Friday, babe.
Yeah, babe. Will the Ravens establish the run game against the Chargers? Have a wonderful day, guys.
I think you have a wonderful day as well. I think they definitely will establish the run game against the Chargers. You know why? Whenever we criticize the running game, they establish the running game. Let's go to David in Baltimore. What's up, David?
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning.
Good morning.
First and foremost, I will give my condolences to Jerry.
Jeremy.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Jeremy, for his loss. My condolences, very much great man, very funny guy. But my shovel goes to you, Rob.
Okay.
Yesterday, you made a step. I used to work for AAA. I used to drive for AAA. I used to go out for services for AAA. And you were one of the guys I could not stand. Grown man, healthy man, could probably pull a brick, but couldn't change a tire. You know how many women was out there waiting for somebody to come change their tire? You a grown man, couldn't change your own tire?
First of all, I can change a tire. However, I pay for a service that I'm going to use. I pay for a service. If it wasn't a paid service, I would change my tire. I changed my tire my entire life. But I have a paid service and an SUV that's not very light. Therefore, on 695, I'm not going to put my life at risk by changing the tire when I pay for a service.
So you're going to put all these ladies' lives at risk?
What ladies' lives?
That's what he said.
So
he said all these women were waiting when you wanted your tire fixed.
Hey, I mean, I pay for a service and I'm on 695. I'm not changing the tire on 695 on the shoulder of a road. Why would I do that?
I don't know. I called AAA when I called
AAA. David, why would I do that?
Rob.
No. Why would I change a tire on 695? This is not a side street with no traffic. This is rush hour on 695 when I have a paid service to do this for me.
Rob.
No. You keep. We established my name. Just answer the question. Why would I do that?
Go ahead.
Listen, why would I do that?
Because you can do it.
Is changing a tire on the interstate something that people advise you not to do? Is that something the Maryland Highway Department advise you not to do?
What's that?
Is to change the tire or work on your vehicle on the interstate. You're advised not to. And I pay for a service, so I'm not doing it. Screw you and your shovel. If I get a flat on the way home, David, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call AAA.
Let me tell you, I don't want to bring this whole amusing topic down, but you're exactly right. Since we're doing high school football buddies today,
yeah.
My friend Joe Adelphio was a really good. He was a tight end, incredible kid, athlete. 32 years old, changing tire, got hit by a truck.
Exactly.
Killed.
Yeah. He's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it. Call me less than a man. If that makes you question my manhood, so be it.
Next time my tire gets a flat, I'll give it to my driveway. I'll call AAA. I'll pay for it. 410-583-1057. That's the number. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show and Fan. Mike Locksley joins us at 9 o'clock. But on the other side, Gino Auriemma surpasses historic coaches for most wins. But do you give him credit with it being women's basketball? Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan.
From ground zero to 59 conference championships, 23 Final Fours, 11 national championships, win streaks of 70, 90, and 111, and now the all-time winningest coach in the history of college basketball.
Gino Auriemma, they actually had a goat come out on the carpet last night as he is honored for most wins in college basketball history with 1,217, beating Tara Vanderveer record from Stanford. Phenomenal feat, phenomenal feat. However, it's one of those accomplishments that could always have an asterisk on it with the rest of this, America, because it's women's college basketball. Mm-hmm. And I think you are the perfect person to have this conversation with. Do you take this record seriously of 1,217 wins?
Yes. The only thing I will say in my cynicism of it, I think it's incredible. I think Brenda's record is incredible. His record is ridiculous. I mean, her winning percentage, though, was like, you're talking about like Krzyzewski type numbers. The only thing I'll say about this is this is not a knock on women's sports of any kind. However, I think the talent is more evenly distributed in men's basketball. In women's basketball, I don't even follow it. And I can tell you the teams that are going to be good year to year, beginning of the season. And I know you can do it somewhat in men's basketball, but not all of them. But I know for sure every year in the female game, it's going to be South Carolina, it's going to be Baylor, it's going to be Maryland's going to be up there, like UConn, obviously. I think they just tend to get so much talent in those programs because they're always good. And I think it's because there's just, maybe not as many people involved. There's not as many players, I'm thinking. And they gravitate to those schools, so you have an advantage that way. But it's still an incredibly impressive record.
Yeah, incredibly impressive record. I agree with you on that. And I think the old conversations of it being top-heavy and things of that nature, I think those are old conversations. I don't think that exists as much anymore. South Carolina being at the top is not – that's a thing that happened within the last decade. That's not – USC being back at the top, that's been a while since that's happened. LSU being back at the top. Mm-hmm. Iowa State is a top 10 program now. Oklahoma fell and they're back. Kansas State is back at the top of the top 10. I think women's basketball now is more evenly distributed than it's ever been before, to be quite honest with you. I think you can go to men's rankings for the most part.
I'll do the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
UConn, Kansas, yep. Gonzaga. Kentucky, Duke.
Yeah.
These are the schools you're always going to see.
The same thing. Yeah.
North Carolina.
You look at North Carolina, Kentucky.
Yeah.
Gonzaga. UConn and Kansas are the top 10. They're always are. They are. I think the difference is Gino Auriemma in his own was head and shoulders above better than everybody else. So if I critiqued it or criticized it at all, I would say for a while it was Gino and the rest of the country was catching up with him ahead, even people in his own conference. You know what I mean? The difference between Gino and number two at times was he was beating the number two team in the country by 20 or 30 points. That was the difference. Yeah. So I think the difference, UConn was set aside special, more special than everybody else. But I still give him credit for that. You know why? By the way, you got to give Chris Daly credit too, because she's been there by his side the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
She was also honored. She's his associate head coach. Yeah. She was honored last night as well. The reason I give Gino credit is because he was going out and he did it from scratch. Dude. Our good friend played at UConn before Gino.
Yes.
And she'll tell you. Gino did it. You don't have to like Gino, and a lot of people don't.
Why don't they like? I like him. I think he's incredible.
He's abrasive.
I know. Yes.
he is, I don't think he has a lot of self-awareness.
Mm-hmm. Damn, that's unusual for a coach.
He's mission-driven. he's cutthroat.
Yeah.
He was all the things that the men's game was.
I was just going to say, it's like every men's coach in basketball.
Before the women's game was willing to embrace it.
Yeah.
Now, you don't hear as many horror stories about him because Dawn Staley is that person. Everybody's that now. The women's game has changed. I'll be honest with you, Ed. I've been coaching women's basketball since 2004. Started off college, now high school. The level of athleticism in this game now is the teams. My first team was nationally ranked as high as six in JUCO. As high as six. The athleticism on that team, which was sensational at the time, is not sensational today. Great basketball players, but you know these girls now, the girls on my bench are exceptionally athletic because more trainers, more dedication to it. So that's why I don't think Gino is destroying people as much now as he was 10 years ago. I think Gino is creating. He's like Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
He forced everybody else to step the game up.
Yeah, change what they do. Yeah,
that's what he did.
No, I think he's an incredible story. And I think it was very nice for the 160 women. They talked about going through the program and how much he's made them strong women, successful women. Absolutely.
That was not the response I thought I was going to get from Ed. Joe? I thought it would be a little more condescending.
No, I'm not going to. I call balls and strikes. It's an incredible feat, man. It really is. Incredible feat.
Mike Locksley would join us at 9 o'clock, Ed. It's always fun talking to Coach Locksley. Yeah. But on the other side, the 25 semifinalists for the 2025 Hall of Fame class. We'll examine them up next on The Fan. Peter Schrager, who always defends the Baltimore Ravens, talking about Terrell Suggs' Hall of Fame pitch. Scott Garceau is the man that does that. Along with Marshall Yonders, who's also a finalist. I think both of those guys are Hall of Famers. I think Suggs probably has the best chance of being the first ballot guy.
I do, too.
Yeah. I think both of them are Hall of Famers, though.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But, you know, again, if you go by what we always say is generation.
Semifinals,
of your, you know, of your generation. Where do you fit in? So, I mean, he certainly fits in that category. He's also, if you think about it, he's always he's got numbers that stack up against anybody.
Yes, he does.
In the history of the game, so it doesn't really matter. Like you think about it, we always go by where you fit in your generation, where you're dominant in your generation. Well, you know, he's eighth on the list. He's a half sack behind Jason Taylor. You think about the guys ahead of him, Kevin Green, Reggie White, Julius Peppers, Strahan, Bruce Smith, number one, obviously with 200 sacks.
Hall of Famers.
Either Hall of Famers. And Suggs certainly is, out of all the ones we talked about on the Ravens, he's, I think, the best shot for first ballot.
Haloney Nada did not make the list of 25 semifinalists. Marshall Yonder did. And Marshall Yonder is an interesting case because I think you can't quantify how dominant he was because there's no stats. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think it's safe to say he was top 3 to 5 guards of his era.
Absolutely.
I think top 3, not top 5. Mm-hmm. It's hard to figure out who the other two are. But he was awesome.
Yeah, there's a guy that let people tase him in the locker room for $500.
Yeah, that's stupid.
He's just that kind of guy.
That's just dumb. All the money you make, man, you need $500. Man, just pass the offer around. Man, let the man take a taser. Yeah, but I love the class. 25. I think, what is it narrowed down? What is it narrowed down to, Joe? 15 finalists?
Yeah, so this year they're doing a little bit differently. They have a screening committee that takes it from 50, or from, what was it? It started like 100 down to 50, then to 25.
167 nominees.
And then that gets down, taken to 50, and then to 25 or 15 or whatever. Then there's another one that goes, that they do it for the Super Bowl, where they pick 3 to 5 players. Another change this year, too, is coaches don't have to wait as long as they used to get in. So Bill Belichick, theoretically, could be in the Hall of Fame next year.
Why not this year?
I think it has to do, it's, you have to be one full year not coaching. So this would be the full year, and then next year he's eligible.
So if he goes next year and gets a job offer at the same time, what happens?
That's a good question.
That's what I was going to ask, because with coaches, they retire, they unretire, you know, because it's not like players where you just can't come back usually because it's not physically possible. Coaches could. How many times has Dean Pease retired? Not a head coach, but
well, we don't have to worry about him going to the Hall of Fame, though.
That was so unnecessary. I mean,
come on, man. Here's an apple. Here's an orange.
Here's a peach.
There you go.
Can't oranges be peaches.
Yeah, oranges be peaches, eh? Come on now. 410-583-1057 is the number. Hubie in Baltimore. What's up, Hubie?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Not much, man.
Just right quick, how could y'all forget Pat Summitt? You speaking about women's basketball,
but I don't think we mentioned any other names. We talked about the one name that he passed, Tara Vanderveer. That's why Pat Summitt's name wasn't mentioned. We mentioned one other name. That's the one lady he passed.
I don't remember hearing it. But speaking of the NFL Hall of Fame, Anquan Boldin, most definitely over 1,000 receptions, over 80 touchdowns, 3-time MVP. three-time Pro Bowler. And an intricate part of helping the Ravens get to the Super Bowl.
Being a part of the Ravens hitting the Super Bowl is not a Hall of Fame qualification.
Neither is Pro Bowl, really.
Neither is Pro Bowl. Yeah. I mean, how many All Pros does he have? A Pro Bowler doesn't. I mean, that's just not. You know,
guys getting the Pro Bowl because other people turn it down.
Yeah,
they're not going to show up. And
he was never an All Pro. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Being an intricate part. Let's be honest. If Anquan Boldin wasn't a Raven, that last guy ain't calling in and talking about he should be in the Hall of Famer.
No.
Intricate part of the Ravens winning the Super Bowl. That means nothing to a Hall of Fame. Nothing. I love people say, you forgot. No, we didn't forget. We didn't forget to say Pat Summitt. She wasn't relevant to the conversation. He passed her years ago. 410-583-1057, that's the number. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. I'm looking at Boldin's numbers. When you tell me receptions, he came up in a passing era. So he's 10th among his peers. 10th among guys whose careers were predominantly in the 2000s, in that passing era. Mm-hmm. He's 10th. All right, I don't know if that's Hall of Fame worthy. He was not, again, those guys were Pro Bowlers. I mean, all pros. I'm looking right now, he was Offensive Rookie of the Year, 3-time Pro Bowler. That's it. That's all I have. Walter Payton Man of the Year. He got an Allen Page Award. Those aren't Hall of Fame statistics, though. I'm just, I would go Steve Smith before I went Anquan Boldin. And I like Anquan Boldin better, but I would go Steve Smith before I went him. Steve Smith, 2-time All Pro.
Yeah.
And he's 5th amongst his peers.
And the best player in his franchise.
And he's 5th amongst his peers, though. Top 5 amongst guys who came up in that passing era. You can't tell me he had that many receptions in a league where you had 2 players on one team with 100 receptions. Come on, man. You know, it's like talking about how many home runs a guy hit in a home run era.
The steroid era. Yeah,
era. Boone hit 40-something home runs that year. Everybody hit 40-something, 50 home runs during that time. No big deal. You can't let that be the reason he goes in. I don't think Anquan Boldin, I think he's a very good football player. I think he should be honored by the teams that he played for, the Ravens and the 49ers. Not the 49ers. The Ravens and the
Cardinals.
Cardinals. I know he played for the 49ers, but I think most of what he did was Ravens, helping them get to the Super Bowl. Yeah. Cardinals, you know, becoming one of the premier receivers.
Well, he was the number 2 receiver.
He started off number 1, and drafted this other guy named, what's his name?
Larry Fitzgerald.
Exactly. Hey, Pinson. Brian Pinson is in the studio today. He's here for his photography class, taking pictures. Brian, I said that on purpose with Larry Fitzgerald because Ed has one of the biggest man crushes on Larry Fitzgerald and some dude to play for the Saints. What's the dude for play for the Saints, Ed?
I know what you're talking about.
What's the dude, Ed?
What are you talking about?
Okay.
The fact that Anquan's a Seminole doesn't hurt you. I think you mean Cameron Jordan.
Cameron Jordan. Yeah. I know it's Cameron Jordan. Cameron Jordan and Larry Fitzgerald. They could both go outside, smack somebody. knock them down
they
with a smack.
They could key my car.
And Ed would say, why do you put your hand, your face in front of their hand? Why did you do that? I told you, it's the Cat Williams skit. Good to have white friends when you get in trouble.
Yeah.
They like you. He didn't do it.
You should be happy about that. Worked out for you.
He didn't do it. Several times. Several times. Why does Rob have the smoking gun in his hand? I don't know. He didn't do it. Okay. Oh, boy. Mike Locksley joins me at 9 o'clock. But on the other side, the FAU Ray Lewis report was a little overblown, but has Dion's success at Colorado convinced former players that they can coach too? God, I hope not. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. See what you did there, Joe. See what you did there. Well, yesterday while on air, we got reports that Ray Lewis was a serious candidate for the Florida Atlantic University job. And then after the show, we heard, not so fast.
Not so much, yeah.
Not so fast, my friend. Not happening yet. Chill out. Not going to happen. In fact, we heard not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Not that it was not so fast. No, not wasn't going to happen. And where do you think these reports came from?
No idea. I really don't. No idea.
I think maybe Ray Lewis's people put this out in hopes that it would
spark some interest on their part.
Yeah, or force the Florida Atlantic hand. Maybe they wanted
That's
to
what I mean,
do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But do you think maybe with Dion's success, it's going to cause more NFL players to think maybe they can be college football coaches?
I guess. I mean, honestly, I look around. I've never seen, or that I can think of top of head, people at his level who made good coaches.
I agree.
And I've always said that. And I don't think he'd make a good assistant coach because he's a different cat. Like, who is going to live up to his standard? You remember when he was here? Mm-hmm. These guys all want to work out with him. They all want to go up to Oregon Ridge and run that hill and do this and do that.
Until they would.
Until Ed Reed was the only one left. Nobody else stayed. They all got burned out. It was him and Ed Reed after a while. So, I mean, I don't know if any player is going to actually live up to his standard. So I just don't know about that.
About football players in general, though. I mean,
this has been good. Mike Ditka was a good coach, and you know, there's been good coaches. Tom Landry played the game. He played for the Giants.
But I think what I'm talking about is like modern day players, like Deion Sanders, like some Hall of Famers. We saw Ed Reed try to stick his big toe in there until the school didn't meet his standards. I just wonder whether or not Deion's success is going to cause this groundswell in coaches or players, former players, saying, "Oh, I could do that. I could do that."
Yeah. I mean, there's more. It's funny. It's odd. I see more of them in the NFL, which seems like it anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, Ron Rivera and D'Amico Ryan, and go down the list. There's a bunch of them in the NFL. Jim Harbaugh. But again, none of those guys are at the level of a Ray Lewis. So I just that's what always. I don't know if Peyton Manning make a great coach.
I don't think he will.
So
I don't think he would. I really don't. 410-583-1057. That's the number. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. You know, looking at the peers, though, I mean, there's a lot of jobs opening up, and I think players believe nowadays that there's a different way or different ways to getting to current players, the different levels of communication to them. And a lot of people believe if you played the game, you may be able to communicate the game better to someone. I think the mindset of great players not making great coaches, I think that mindset is starting to change. I think a lot of the great players believe that they can make great coaches because they would have more to give to the players than people who weren't so great. I think it's kind of changed a little bit.
Maybe.
Whether or not it's true, I think the mindset has changed. Whether it's true or not is something different. I think Deion, everybody's not Deion Sanders, though.
No.
Deion Sanders is a different cat.
Mm-hmm.
As I said last week, I don't know if you were here. I think you were. Deion Sanders, to me, is a figure-it-out guy.
Yeah.
You know, put him in any situation, give him some time, he'll figure it out. Everybody's not wired that way.
No. The question is, do you think Deion's a good coach?
Well, defined coach. John Harbaugh is a CEO,
mm-hmm.
which makes him successful.
Yeah.
Do I think he's a good coach?
I think what coaches are, we need a head coach.
Well, that's the case in Deion. I think Deion Sanders is akin to Harbaugh in that he's great at delegating.
Or is he great at recruiting?
Great at delegating. I mean, Deion Sanders is not going to find a talent. Deion Sanders is going to close the deal. He's not going to a high school football game and looking at kids.
No, but I bet he goes to the living room. So.
He's the seal of the deal.
Yeah.
You know, he's delegating. He knows who to go, where to go. I think the way college football is run, I think Deion, and that's why I think a lot of the, you're kind of making my point on college and not so much the NFL. You're kind of making my point for me with these former players. I think they believe they can communicate and talk to players better because they play the game on a high level. If I'm Ray Lewis and I sit in your living room and I tell you the stories and you know what I did, and your dad knows what I did, and your mom knows what I did, it may make you want to come play for me a little bit more than some guy who's never played on my level before.
Yeah.
I
can't imagine if I was the father of a player and Deion Sanders walking into my house. That'd be pretty awesome.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You probably tend to listen to him a little bit louder.
Yeah.
Or a little bit more, I should say. I believe we're going to find more and more of this as we move forward. I do. This is not a new thing. This is not going to be it's a new thing, but I don't think it's going to go away. I think you're going to find former players more and more. And I think coaches, as we go on in all sports, I saw Larry last night. I forget what team, maybe you remember, Joe, Jerry McNamara used to play for basketball for Syracuse. He's coaching Division I sports, Division I basketball team. He was on TV last night. I think coaches who played on that level, on a certain level, younger and younger, they get an opportunity. The Lakers coach.
Right.
Never coached before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're not doing that bad.
No. He got a lot of criticism. He got more than most.
That's what it is, yeah, huh?
He got a lot of criticism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think the criticism is going to die. The minute they don't turn it around, I mean, the minute they don't get it done, it's going to be because, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I got to be honest with you. I was wrong. I thought it would be a crap show from day one.
Mm-hmm.
And it has not been. He has not been that bad. So I got to give him credit. He ain't been that bad, man. It seems like they're listening to him. Seems like he's getting through to him. 410-583-1057.
Two of the best coaches, the ones we always talk about in the NFL, Harbaugh and Tomlin, neither played in the pros. Tomlin played for William & Mary. Harbaugh played for Miami of Ohio. This is not blue blood football schools. I think they're both great coaches, though.
Let's go out to the phone lines right now. Let's get Gio in Baltimore. What's up, Gio?
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. This is my question. Not that I don't know the game and the guy head coaching and all that, but it just put a light bulb up there. I understand Ray Lewis. That's good that he's going into coaching, but today or any time, who does the coaching? Because you got offensive line, you got defensive line coach, you got an offensive coordinator. So what does the head coach?
You've always had that. You've always had that.
See, that's. I'm sorry. I hate to do this. I got to push back hard on that. Yeah. That's like asking what the leader of any organization does. You don't listen. When I was police commissioner, in charge of 41,000 people, deputy commissioner, but I was in charge of operation or police commissioner. We had cars, buildings, helicopters. Do you think we had a car delivery? I went out and counted the cars that came in. Do you think I ran to patrol forces or the detective bureau? No, you pick smart people and you have them run these things for you, and you support them so they get the stuff they need. That's what head coaches do. They're CEOs, well, COOs really. They're chief operating officers. They do everything, but at that level, they direct other people.
Let's go out to Chris, who is in San Antonio. What's up, Chris?
What's up, guys? I got to disagree a little bit. I get what you're saying about the CEO thing, but I still think as a head coach on a small football team, his job is to bring the best out of everybody.
What small football team?
No, I mean compared to a police organization to the Ravens football team.
CEOs, man, they're all CEOs. Ed's 110% right. Those guys set the culture for the other coaches to follow.
Yeah, and that's you're making my argument for me, sir. That's exactly what you do as a CEO. You lead, you inspire, you motivate people, you get the best out of it, you find the best talent, but you leave the day-to-day stuff, the minutia, up to your assistants. That's what you do.
Yeah, but Rob said earlier, do you think he's a good coach, though? Do you think he's a good coach, yes or no?
Yes. He's the head coach. He's a good head coach. Whether he be a good offensive or a defensive coordinator, I don't know. Probably not. Maybe not. But for his position, listen, I worked for, I hate to be one of them, Bill Bratton. Bill Bratton was a great, I knew more about crime fighting than so did Jack Maplehead. I think he'd admit that readily. But he was a great organizational leader. He really was.
Hey, Chris, we're turning this into another conversation about Harbaugh, but let me ask you this question. You said, do I think he's a good coach? Now, I think there are offensive and defensive coordinators that have gone on to be head coaches that are lousy at their jobs because they're specific to one side of the ball. John Harbaugh, I think, is better at being the head coach than I think he is at being the offensive or defensive coordinator because he's a better CEO. I think he's meant to be a head coach. I don't think John Harbaugh will ever get a job as a coordinator with anybody. 410-583-1057, that's the number. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. Jacob Calvin-Meyer joins us at 9:30, but on the other side, we're talking Maryland football with Coach Locksley on the Fan.